Good morning, everybody.
Hi.
My name's Nora.
I'm Sarah.
We're with the Boston Book Festival. We just have a couple of brief and very serious announcements to make this morning. First of all, just a quick reminder that there's no food or drink here in Trinity Sanctuary. This is a beautiful building. We want to keep it that way. And secondly, you should have seen it earlier today. Rick was backstage signing about 1,000 copies of his newest books. And those will be for sale at the tent right outside this building as soon as the session is over. And I think that's pretty much
I really want to tell them. Can we tell them, please?
I don't think we should tell them.
Oh, don't you guys want to know a really good secret? I feel like this is a trustworthy group.
All right, okay. Now, this shouldn't leave this room, though, okay? At least not until after the session. So we have been very busy planning something very special. And we decided that there's not quite enough kids and family stuff that happens at the book festival in October. We wish we could do even more. And so we decided to start another festival. Just for kids
just
and families.
For you guys.
Yeah.
Yay! I told you it was good. Good idea.
So that'll be coming up June 20th of 2015. So you know you have to get through this whole school year, but at the end of it is
something
hubbub.
Really fun. Hubbub. We will have puppets and magic and music and children's illustrators and authors and all kinds of wonderful surprises around every corner of Copley Square. So we hope you have a wonderful time today and come back in June.
I do want to thank a couple people, a couple groups. First of all, I'd like to thank our presenting partner, WBUR 90.9 FM, Boston's NPR news station. And I'd also like to thank our sponsors for this session, Simmons College, which is a great place where grown-ups can get as excited about children's books as all of you are. And I'd like to introduce from Simmons College, Kathy Mercier.
Good morning, everyone. It is my pleasure to launch, the Children's and Young Adult Literature Celebrations at the 2014 Boston Book Festival. I am the director of the Center for the Study of Children's Literature at Simmons College here in Boston. We live, breathe, and eat children's and young adult literature, and it's wonderful to see all of you out here doing the same today. We have been a proud sponsor of the festival and are particularly proud to be sponsoring this kid's keynote. Like you, I have my own personal obsession with the Rick Riordan books, every one of them. My personal obsession comes partly from Rick's Japanese and Taiwanese translators, who are two former students of mine. So they see his books a little bit early, and they get to read them in two languages. And they send to me these secret little notes about what to expect and what's coming up. Their passion for these books fuels the already ablaze national and international fans like you, who embrace Riordan's spirited storytelling, his action-packed narratives, his compelling characters, and his engaging and unique sense of humor. I cannot but believe that I would have mastered Greek and Roman mythology much better than I did. I was not good. Had I read these books when I was a young person. I know that The Blood of Olympus is still hot off the presses, and yet it's already really hard to find. With over 35 books to his credit. Yes.
Thanks. All right. Boston, who's excited? Huh? What's going on? Let's make some noise in the balcony. All right. I am not Uncle Rick, as most of you know. But I am here to tell you a few things. A couple of rules here. No biting, no pushing, no poking. Mom, that means you. Everybody, I know people were told to turn off your phones. Don't turn off your phones. Turn off your ringers. We want people to take pictures, video, hashtag, there will be blood. Repeat after me. There will be blood. Woo! Right on. Okay, guys. So, what are we here for? Besides to see Uncle Rick, who's been hiding under a rock for the last year, making everybody crazy. I just went through your questions a little while ago and saw everybody's like, why do you make us crazy? Why do you make us crazy? Well, he's going to tell you why he makes you crazy and does this once a year. This is the last event, guys. Last event, and he's gone. So make the most of it. The author of the number one book in the country and in the U.S. and several countries around the world this week, The Blood of Olympus. Everybody shout out and welcome Uncle Rick Riordan.
Nice to see you guys. Wow. Well, thank you very much. Wow, that's you know, this place was impressive when it was empty, but with it full, wow. I walked in this morning and I saw all these people in orange shirts and I thought, demigods, but it was the staff, they're dressed in orange. I think they're probably still demigods, that's okay. The other thing I noticed, those Romans, they're everywhere. I came in this morning and there's a little SPQR up here on the nave. You gotta check it out if you get a chance. Well, I am here because I've spent the last week celebrating around the country with all you guys, and we're here because the last book in the Heroes of Olympus just came out. Boo, the last book of who? If you don't speak Twitter, of course, that's short for Blood of Olympus, the last book of Heroes of Olympus. So a lot of people thought I was trying to have fun with you guys by making it boo-hoo. I wanted you to cry. Not true, you guys just do that anyway. The cover also really kind of freaked people out because they looked at the cover and they said, why are there only Roman demigods there? Where are the Greeks? Are they dead? What happened to them? So I told everybody you should just look more closely. So everybody online was like zooming in and trying to find Percy and the giant's hair and stuff. Finally, I said, oh no, he's not on the cover. I just said you should look more closely. The UK cover, actually, I think this is probably the first time it's ever gotten more love than the American cover. Don't know if you've seen it, but that's Blood of Olympus in the UK. I really like it because it has all seven demigods on it. Although they sort of do look like heavily armed fashion models. I'm not sure what's up with Leo's like, my outfit today includes skinny stonewashed jeans, an organic t-shirt, and a chainsaw. $79.99 at Macy's. Thank you. You know, it's really hard for me to believe that it's been almost 10 years since The Lightning Thief came out. I don't know how that happened. It's nuts. I mean, how did I get here? So, you know, we're here on a Saturday morning and there's like 1,200 of you guys that come out to talk about the books. That's so awesome. Well, it didn't happen overnight. It took me a long time. You may have heard that writers have to suffer for their art, right? And it's very true. Even when I was a young guy, I was very unhappy. There I am. I know, no love. Nobody loved me. There's my family. On the left there, that's my mom in the red dress, and she was great. And the guy in the middle there, that's my grandfather. We just called him the Colonel because he was a colonel in the Air Force during World War II. The thing I remember the most about the Colonel is that he had this briefcase full of blank paper. And when I would go over to his house, when I was a little older than that, I would sit on his lap and he would tell me stories. He would just make them up and he would draw pictures just out of thin air. And I thought that was really a kind of magic. And I said to myself, you know, someday I want to be able to do that. The other guy on the right, that's my Uncle Reese. He influenced me in a different way. He used to babysit me when I was little, when I was just learning how to speak. And he used to say, okay, Ricky, let's practice your words. Floor, ceiling. So I think I got my twisted sense of humor from him, probably. Yeah. You know, my parents were really awesome. My dad, You know, he told me my first myths. He read me my first book of mythology. We did all kinds of really, you know, masculine, virile activities together. Like, that's probably our favorite sport. I'm still pretty good at it. My mom was a teacher in the public school. She taught art, and I think that's where I got my impeccable fashion sense. Yeah, there's me rocking the hat at the pool. Mm-hmm. She got me my first car. Yeah. That ride was actually made by my other grandfather, Tom Riordan, who, that was his job. He owned an amusement park ride-making factory, which is like the dream job for your grandparents to have when you're a kid. And they told me stories. All of them were big storytellers, and I loved that. But then they said, Rick, someday you're going to have to go to school. You're going to have to learn to read on your own. Won't that be exciting? And I said, you want me to read? No, I'm out of here. Sorry. I hit the streets at an early age. Yeah. Not really. I did stick in school, but I was a very reluctant reader. I did not choose to pick up books. I was not one of those kids. About the only thing that I really enjoyed reading were these. I love comic books. Both of my uncles, they had this big comic book collection. I wish I still had it, because it would be worth so much money right now. It was Golden Age, Silver Age, Marvel, DC comics. They had the early Batman, the early Superman, the Spider-Man, X-Men, Fantastic Four, you name it. These are a couple I still have, and you'll notice that there's a connection here to what I write. There's Circe the Sorceress turning Superman into a beast. And over here, of course, that's Odin holding the body of the god Thor. So already I was getting into mythology. I just didn't know it. Now, that would have been cool if I could have just read that. Unfortunately, I had to read other stuff, and things really got bad when I got into middle school. Oh, my goodness. These are my teachers at Alamo Heights Junior School in San Antonio, Texas, where I grew up. I remember a few of these. The guy in the middle, second row, Mr. Fielder, he was my band director. He always had the big disco lapels and the gold chains. The guy in the bottom right corner, that was Mr. Phelps. He was my history teacher. We were pretty sure he was an android. He had no emotion at all. Every day it would be like, you will now turn in your homework. Exterminate! Exterminate! It's pretty bad. The only thing worse than the teachers were the students. Oh yeah, there's my eighth grade class. I didn't know it at the time. This is from our yearbook. And the girl on the bottom row, four in there, I didn't know it, of course, but someday she would become my wife. That's Becky. I know, right? And this is her yearbook. And you notice how next to that guy's name in the corner, she wrote, Foxy. That wasn't me. That was me. Yeah. Nobody called me Foxy, go figure. I had a terrible time in middle school. I hated it. I was teased, I was bullied, I didn't fit in with any of the cliques. It was awful. There were really only two options back then. You could either play outside or you could read. I mean, we didn't have social media, we didn't have smartphones, we couldn't text, we couldn't email, we didn't have cable TV, we didn't have DVDs, we had nothing. Okay, we had Pong. Boop, boop. Yeah, you know, that'll keep you going for hours. So I didn't like going outside, I didn't like reading either, but given the two, I chose reading. The first thing I remember reading for fun was this, The Lord of the Rings. I love that. It had monsters, it had dark lords and heroes and magic, all this great stuff. And then I found out that there was a teacher at my middle school, Mrs. Pabst, who had done her master's thesis on Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings. And I thought, wow, she's got to be the coolest teacher ever. I need to get into her class. There was only one problem. Mrs. Pabst only taught honors English. And I had never been in honors anything. I was the kid in the back of the room that never raised his hand. But I went to the principal and I said, I really want to be in Mrs. Pabst's class. The principal looked at me like he wasn't sure who I was. Well, all right, I'll ask your regular English teacher what she thinks. The next day, my regular English teacher asked me a question in class for the first time. Yeah, Ricky, in the back. Can you tell me what irony is? I blanked. This was my big chance, and I couldn't think of the definition. Finally, I said, "Irony is the fact that I can't think of the definition of irony right now." She bought it, and I got into honors English. Mrs. Papps got me right away. She said, "Oh, you like comic books? You like The Lord of the Rings? You need to be reading Norse mythology, because that's where a lot of that stuff comes from." So she introduced me to the Norse gods, Odin, Loki, Thor, all of these amazing stories from the Viking Age. She also was the first person to say that I should be a writer. I wrote some stories for her class, and she said, "Ricky, these are really good. You should send one of these off to see if you can get it published." Well, back then, guys, we didn't have Wattpad. It's not like you could just publish it online. If you wanted something published, you had to send it to a magazine, cross your fingers, and wait. And so that's what I did. I waited for 6 weeks to see if this story would be published. Finally, I got a reply in the mail. There it is, my first rejection note. I know, it's so old that if you look at it, you'll see it's done on carbon paper with a typewriter. The guy was really nice. He said, "First of all, let's get it straight. There's no such thing as being too young to send in a story. If you're old enough to write, go for it." He said, "This is really good for somebody who's 13, but we can't use it. It's not quite the right kind of story for us. Keep trying." My mom was so delighted that I got rejected. Oh. She put this in a frame and she hung it in our house. I had to look at it every time I walked through the living room. True story, when I was in college, my mom's house burned to the ground. Everything was destroyed. Except that. They pulled it out of the fire, totally fine, put it back in a frame. It's still hanging in my mom's house. Rejection is a powerful thing. I went on to high school. I kept trying to write. Oh, what the heck? What the heck? That's interesting. Let's see, what's next? Oh, there we go. I don't contemplate murder quite yet. I decided to go with a hippie look for high school. There's me in ninth grade. Yeah, pretty awesome, right? I kept a journal because they told me that's what writers are supposed to do. That's a page from my high school journal. And I also did an underground newspaper that made fun of the football team, and I got in a lot of trouble for that. I got kicked out of several classes for mouthing off. I got terrible grades. I got kicked out of marching band. I probably would have been kicked out of school. There was only one thing that saved me, and that is I met a girl. That's Becky, and she really is my Annabeth. I'm like Percy, a big goofball. You know, I get in trouble. I don't do well in school. But she kept me going. She kept me interested in school. She kept me on the straight and narrow. So we got through high school, got a diploma, and together we went on to college. Now, could my hair get longer? Why, yes, it could. In college, I decided, you know, this writing thing is really hard. Maybe I'll just be a rock star. That'll be much easier. I joined a band, and that was my job in school. I played folk rock, and we did little gigs on the side. But I found out very quickly, I am not the god Apollo. I do not write good music. Two good things came out of college. One is Becky and I got married. Yay! You may... You may be wondering why there are birthday candles on our wedding cake. That's because Becky and I have the same birthday. She is 30 minutes older than I am. And we decided just to put all the big events on one day, June 5th. So it's great. I've never forgotten my anniversary. This is super. The other good thing that came out of college is I decided to become a teacher, and I had to cut my hair. Yay! I loved being a teacher. I taught for 15 years, mostly middle school. There's a picture of me in my classroom. And because I was a pretty poor student and I got bored easily, I didn't want to do that to my students. I always tried to make the units as exciting as I could. For instance, when we did Korea, we brought out the local Taekwondo team and we learned how to break boards over each other's heads. When I did Shakespeare, we had a theatrical sword fighter come and teach us how to do fencing. Imagine 30 eighth graders with swords in their hands. They let me do that. Yeah. Probably the craziest thing I got away with at a school I was teaching at in San Francisco, we did Greek mythology. And all the kids dressed up in like togas, and we went out behind the school, and we wrote prayers to the gods, fired up the barbecue pit, and did burnt offerings. It's pretty cool. By the way, if you ever want to make a sacrifice to Aphrodite, burning Barbie dolls smell really bad. Don't do it. Well, while I was teaching, funny thing, I did start thinking about writing a murder mystery. Why middle school would make me think about contemplating murder, I can't imagine. But I wrote my first manuscript, and there it is, 375 pages. I had no idea what I was doing. Finally, I got through it, and I sent it off to some editors and agents, and I got back so many comments. If you look inside that manuscript, every page has comments in like three different colors. Did they make you guys do that at school where you have to rewrite? Yes. Do you find that annoying? Yes. Me too. The thing is, though, I have since found out that's just part of it. That's part of writing. No one has ever written a perfect first draft. It can't be done. I've written 25 novels. I still have to revise. This thing, I had to revise the entire manuscript 14 times. Was it fun? No. But finally, I got it where they wanted to publish it, and when it came out, this was the cover. Big red tequila. Everything in Texas is bigger, even murder. It did okay. It won some awards. I went on to write 7 of these while I was a full-time middle school teacher. I wrote one in Austin, where I went to college, called The Devil Went Down to Austin. Some of them even got translated into other languages. That's my second book, The Widower's Two-Step, in Japanese. And I just thought to myself, well, I assume that says The Widower's Two-Step, because that's the title. Someone who speaks Japanese years later said, oh no, that says Honky Tonk Girl. So the little things they do, like change the title and not tell you, you know. Inside, the thing that struck me most is that in Japanese, you don't read right to left. You read in columns, up to down. I said that at a school in California one time, and a girl said, oh, so that's why. And I said, what? She said, I was on the plane with someone and they were reading in Japanese and they kept going. Finally made sense to her. But the thing about writing is that everybody would always ask me, oh, so you're a writer now. What did you do before that? As if now that I have a book published, I'm sitting by the pool all day, right? I've retired. Well, the truth is very different. Most writers never quit their day job and they keep doing what they're doing for a long, long time. Let me put it in perspective for you. How many books do you think the average American reads in the course of 1 year? Anybody want to hazard a guess? How many books do you think the average American reads? Yes, in the orange shirt. About 23. Any other guesses? Yes, right in front. 365. One book a day. Wow! That'd be awesome! Yes, in the maroon. About 10. Ah, the actual one, you're very close. 15 books a year. Yeah, that's average. Now, I'm guessing that a lot of you are above the average. Yeah? Well, here's the thing. We need you to be above the average because 40% of Americans read no books during the course of the year. None, not one. Okay, let me ask you a different question. How many books do you think we publish in the United States every year? Different titles, not copies. Different books by different people. Anybody, every year, how many do you think? What do you think? About 2. It's, you know, me and Dan Brown and that's it, right? Yeah. pretty much done, right? Yeah. 18. About 18. Okay, what do you think? About 34. About 34. The numbers get bigger, but the actual number, 328,000. Yeah. So, if the average American is reading 15 books a year and we're cranking out 328,000 books every year, how many of those books are going to get read? Not many. It's very difficult to get noticed if you're a writer because there's so many books every year. Now, another question. How do you think the writer gets the money for writing? What's my cut? Like, if you went outside today and they'll have these nice signed copies of Blood of Olympus, you pick one up, let's just round it to, I don't know, 20 bucks. How much do you think the writer gets of that 20? What's my percentage? Yes? About $3? Okay. What do you think? About 3 cents. we have the pessimist in the crowd. That's excellent. Well, the actual number is between that. It's about 10%, roughly. So it depends on a lot of things, but if you bought a book for 20 bucks, I get 2 bucks. Where does the rest go? Well, there's a lot of people that help make that book. You have to pay the bookseller, you have to pay the distributor, the wholesaler, the editor, the publicist, the publisher, everybody who went into making that book. So in other words, you'd have to sell a lot to get really rich, right? My first advance, the money they give you up front for my first novel, Big Red Tequila, was $15,000. Don't get me wrong, at the time, that was a lot of money, and I was really, really happy to have it. But yearly salary-wise, that's not a lot. So I didn't quit my day job. I kept writing and teaching for a long time. And that was fine. I really liked my classroom. I used to dress up funny. There's Colonial Rick. There's Samurai Rick. And the ever-popular Shakespearean Rick. I told stories in class all the time. Some of them went well, some of them not so much. There's me being frozen by Medusa. One time I went into my younger son Patrick's class. They had this program called the Mystery Reader when he was in elementary school. I don't know if you guys ever had that. Where they just have sort of a guest come in and read a story during library time, and they don't tell you in advance. I did that so many times that one day I came in to do the Mystery Reader bit. The teacher was like, okay, everybody, close your eyes. We have a very special guest today. All the kids closed their eyes. I crept up to the front of the room. Teacher said, open your eyes. Surprise, it's Rick Riordan. One kid in the front went, I knew it was going to be him again. My students always ask me, why aren't you making stories for kids? You teach middle school. You write books already. Why aren't you putting the two together? It was an excellent question, but I didn't have any ideas until I had children of my own. In 1994, my first son was born. He doesn't look like that anymore. Yeah. That's Haley, and you're probably thinking Haley's a girl's name. Well, no, actually it's an Irish boy's name. It means ingenious, but over the years, like Riley and Shannon and Carrie and a lot of the Irish boys' names, it's sort of been co-opted and it's become a girl's name. We had no idea that in 1994, the year he was born, Haley would become the most popular girl's name of all time. So, sorry, buddy, but he's cool with it. Haley was a handful. He doesn't look like trouble, does he? No, he looks nice and sweet. He was trouble. I remember one time we lived in California. We had this furnace with a floor vent. He had his little bowl of Cheerios. He toddled up, dumped the Cheerios in the floor vent. They caught fire. Flames were leaping up like the pit of Tartarus. Smoke billowing in. This fire alarm went off. His mom got the fire extinguisher. We were both running around. Haley thought that was cool. He wanted to see it again. The next day, he found a basket full of laundry. He dumped it on the grate. He went over to the thermostat and he cranked it to 100. Pretty soon, flames were leaping up. We're running around with the extinguisher. Ah! And that's just the kind of easy kid that he was. When he got into school, it didn't get any better. I thought I was a reluctant reader. Oh man, this kid, he did not like to read anything. The only thing he liked in elementary school was Greek mythology. He thought that was pretty cool. That's Haley dressed up as Hades, the Lord of the Dead. And so to keep him interested in school, I started telling him bedtime stories about Greek mythology. Because Haley was dyslexic and ADHD, still is, I decided to create a character who was ADHD and dyslexic, like him. And I said, you know what? If you have those conditions, Haley, there's a pretty good chance you're a demigod. And he was like, yeah. And that is how was born the stories of Peter Johnson. Or Percy Jackson, whatever. Same, different. Haley told me I should write the story down. I didn't think anybody would like it, but I sent it off to New York. Right away, I got a call from an agent, Nancy Galt. She said, "This is great. I want to represent you." She sent it to Disney Hyperion Publishers. My first editor there, Jennifer Besser, said, "Oh, we love this. We want to publish the whole series." She said, "The first thing we need is a good cover, because everyone judges a book by its cover." She said, "We have a wonderful idea. We're going to make the Lightning Thief cover look like this." And I said, "Wow, that's awful. Can we do something different?" So she found a different artist who lived out in LA. He does covers for video games. He never read the book, but he said, "Oh, Greek monsters? No problem." I said, "Well, that's a little disturbing. Can you tone it down a bit?" So he did. And I can laugh at it now, but folks, that was the first cover it had when it was published. Sometimes you'll still see copies in the library that have that cover on it. I didn't like it very much. The readers didn't really like it. So we tried again. I was very lucky that they let me try again. Jennifer found an artist named John Rocco. Lived in Brooklyn. Good guy. He had never done a cover before for a children's book or any book. But he read the book, he came and he said, "Oh, cool." He took a napkin and he sketched out a design. He said, "There, there's your cover." We were like, "Whoa, that's great." And so he made it, and the cover that you probably recognize came to be, The Lightning Thief. Ah, great. You know, the thing is, though, every time there was another country that published the book, they would make up their own cover because they think kids in their country like different approaches. For instance, there's the Korean Lightning Thief. Here's the Swedish Lightning Thief. What is that guy doing? It's like, "Hey, just get over here." The French Lightning Thief, Le Voleur de Faudrey. Yeah, and some of these look like they were made with about $20 and a copy of Photoshop. There is the Ukrainian Percy Jackson. Looks like Percy goes to Candyland. The Romanian Percy Jackson. Oh yeah, Percy Jackson in the Hotel Fugarudy. And the Germans, oh boy. What can I tell you about the Germans? Everyone warned me that they had no sense of humor. Their covers are really dark, really somber, serious. So I was preparing myself for the serious German cover. And then I get it, and it looks like that. Yeah. You know, the funny thing is, since then they've changed it. I can't imagine why. It was perfection, but it now looks like that in Germany. Yeah. Well, you know, at this point, The Sea of Monsters was going to be the second book, and again, we had so many different approaches for the cover. Here's the Vietnamese one. Here's the Italian one. They always look so fashionable in Italy. It's like, "La." And of course, the Germans. As Percy boldly surfs into the Cyclops' armpit. By this time, my younger son Patrick was old enough to help out. At first, he really didn't want anything to do with Percy Jackson. That was his brother's deal. He said, "No, I don't want to know about it." Then one day, I took him to a school visit in San Antonio, and he got to sort of hear what I did. And he said, "Oh, that's what you write about, Dad? Okay, that's cool." Yeah. And so he started helping out. I mean, we had read together forever. This is our favorite book right there. Have you read Everyone Poops? Oh, it's awesome. I won't tell you how it comes out in the end, but it's awesome. So at that point, Patrick started helping out. And I got to say, he is my top line editor. Every time I have a manuscript, if I can get Patrick to read it, he catches so many mistakes. The first time he did that, he was like, "Will you pay me for every mistake?" Okay, and at that point, I'd read it like 5 times. My editor had read it 3 or 4 times. I figured, you know, what is he going to find? 2 mistakes? I said, "Okay, sure. I'll give you $10 for a mistake." He found 40. So I think I know what he's going to do for a living. He's going to be a copy editor and make lots of good money. So he and Haley both helped me read the other books. The Titan's Curse, the third one, tough one for the cover, man. John did so many different sketches. He did those three. And then finally, he did this really simple one like that, of Percy on Blackjack the Pegasus looking out over Manhattan. We said, that's awesome, do that. So when it came out, that's the cover we used. The first time I showed this in public, I was talking to 2,000 eighth graders at a school in Austin, Texas. I had it as a billboard, and I brought out, I said, behold the Titan's Curse. This kid in the audience went, look, he's riding a hippo. And then another kid tried to make me feel better. She said, no, that's not a hippo. That's a moose. Thanks. Yes, there's Percy riding his war moose into battle. So guys, just so we're clear, that's a guy on a war moose, okay? Pegasus, war moose, all right, good. Well, at this time, the UK decided they want to embarrass me too, so they did a cover for the Titan's Curse that I like to call Attack of the Ketchup. And again, since then they've changed it, I can't imagine why, but now it looks more like the American version. And then I figured, you know, okay, two more books and we'll wrap it up. So I did The Battle of the Labyrinth. Percy's story ended with the last Olympian. And that was all good. I thought I would go on and write other things. Since then, they have changed the cover art. I don't know if you've seen the new covers. John Rocco did those too. This is what they look like now. And they sort of fit together in this massive mural. In fact, if you get the box set, there's like a whole poster of the art. It's pretty cool. But I decided to try new things. First, I worked with Scholastic Books and we did something called the 39 Clues. That was fun. Then I went to ancient Egypt and I did the Cain Chronicles, which was also a lot of fun. Yeah. The Cain Chronicles, they also did real well overseas. There's the German Cain Chronicles, the Korean Cain Chronicles, the Russian Cain Chronicles, and of course the Italians. Carter's like, I would totally fight you, but it would mess up my hair. But at that point, I knew that I wanted to go back to Percy's world. I didn't want to do it just the same old way, because like I said earlier, I get bored easily. I knew I could do Percy Jackson 6, Percy Jackson 8, Percy Jackson 35, you know. But the thing is, if I get bored, it's going to show in the writing, and then you guys are going to get bored too. So I went to his world, but I did it with a whole bunch of new heroes, people like Frank Zhang, Hazel Levesque, Piper McLean, Jason Grace, and of course, everyone's favorite, Octavian. No, I'm just kidding, Leo Valdez. And so was born the Heroes of Olympus series. And there's the first three. House of Hades was the fourth. And of course, we're here today because of the Blood of Olympus, the final book. Probably the top character that gets on the covers for these books is Festus the Dragon. Everybody loves Festus. I don't know. Here's Festus in the UK. Here's Chinese Festus. And the Germans did this kind of steampunk Festus, which is sort of cool. So I love that. That was a great series. Last summer, I tried something new again. I decided to tell the Greek myths, all the original gods, but tell their stories from Percy Jackson's point of view, with all his snark and all his sass. And that's why in August we had Percy's Greek gods that came out. Yeah. I see some of you holding it up. Please don't. You're going to hurt yourself because they're really heavy. The things weigh like 10 pounds. Be careful with that. So that's what I'm working on. Here's some of the art from the Greek gods. Love John Rocco's illustrations. My favorite one is probably the one with Zeus. Somebody on Twitter zoomed in and said, why is Zeus holding French fries? And can I have them? And Zeus is like, no, they're my fries. Well, what's up with us? About a year and a half ago, we moved from our home in San Antonio, Texas, to right here in Boston. We're loving it. We love Boston. It's fantastic. There's me in my home office. There's the view out my window of the Charles River. It's not a bad place to write. The family is doing great. There's our three black cats. There's me and Becky, Haley and Patrick, and Speedy the dog. And so we're really loving it up here. And this is the next thing that I'm working on, Percy Jackson's Greek Heroes. That comes out next summer. It's just like Percy Jackson's Greek Gods, except with, you guessed it, heroes. So you will hear Percy's take on Hercules, Perseus, Theseus, all of those guys. I don't even know how you're going to lift this book, because it's even bigger than the Greek gods. But I hope you guys like it when it comes out. And the other thing I can announce to you is that maybe you've heard rumors, and the rumors are true. Next year at this time, we're going Norse. Magnus Chase and the gods of Asgard. You will get to see all the Norse gods, Loki, Thor, Odin, all of those guys. You know from hearing me today, I've loved these myths forever and ever. Magnus Chase, you're thinking, that name sounds familiar. Chase, Annabeth Chase. That's not a coincidence. They are related. Now, how exactly? There's a little hint in Blood of Olympus of how they're connected. I'll let you find that on your own. They do exist, the worlds of Magnus and the worlds of Percy Jackson. They're side by side. Will they interact at any point? I can't tell you. But I can tell you that Magnus and his series are set right here in Boston. So you will know a lot. The first book of the series is called The Sword of Summer, and it will be out this time next year. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Now, you guys have been a great audience, and there's a lot of wonderful things happening today at the festival. I hope you get to see all of the other panels. They look awesome. But before we adjourn, I do want to get to some of the questions that you guys left me. I read a lot of these. They're awesome. We can't get to all of them, but let's see what we got here. Okay, this is from, it's somebody. Who is your favorite god or goddess? Oh, wow. That's really hard. I'm going to have to say probably... this week, I think Hermes is my favorite. I like Hermes just because he's the god of so many things. He's like completely ADD. Yeah, I'll be the god of that too, and that too. I like that. I can get behind that. Question from Lady? Lady? Do you ever read fan fiction? No, never. I stay away from it completely. It's really, really kind of disconcerting to me. I mean, it's fine for me that people do it. I don't want to know about it, though. I don't want to hear about it for several reasons. One, I don't want somebody to come up later and say, hey, you got that idea from my fan fiction. I was like, no. And the other thing is, it's just weird. It's like watching somebody try to, like, try on my clothes and pretend to be me. You know, it's just, it's weird. Of course, then again, I can't even listen to the audio versions of my own books. I mean, hearing somebody say my books out loud, it drives me crazy. All right, next question. This is from Jocelyn. If you could go back and change one scene from Percy Jackson or Heroes of Olympus, what would it be? Everything? That's because a book is never done. It's only due. I mean, I look back on it now, and I'm like, oh, man, I would totally change that and this and that. There was one scene that we cut from The Last Olympian where the bully, Nancy Boba Fett, from The Lightning Thief, comes back in the last book, and we cut it because it was just too confusing. Now, looking back, I think I would put that back in because it was kind of fun. Why does Percy and Annabeth, why do Percy and Annabeth leave Bob? Well, if you've read The House of Hades, I don't want to give it away, but Bob's a main character. Yeah, well, Bob, you know, you never really leave Bob. Bob is always in your heart. But it just had to happen. I mean, it's the only way they could solve that particular problem. Devin wants to know, daughter of Hecate, do you enjoy making us fans cry? No, Devin, it's just a lovely side benefit. Thank you. This is from Steph, and she says, your battle scenes are so vivid and clear. Do you ever draw them first before you write them? No, I guess I'm just a real visual thinker. I kind of see how the battle has to happen. And so that's how I write them. Sadie, hey, I like that name. Sadie wants to know, what are the connections between the old characters, and the new characters. Like in Magnus Chase? Well, you'll just have to wait and find out, I'm afraid. Katrina would like to know, what quality of Percy and Annabeth's relationship is the most important? The fact that they're still alive. How did your version of Tartarus come to be? Mostly it's described as a pit, but I show it as a Titan's body, a surreal landscape. Well, like Gaia is the Earth, but she's also a goddess. I thought that was a fun idea, so I just applied that to Tartarus too. He's a god, but he's also a place, so he's both at the same time. Do children of Hermes have any special powers? Well, does shoplifting count? And finally, anonymous question here. When are you going to write the Asian mythology series? Uh-huh. You know, there are so many great mythologies. I would love to do something on Indian mythology, Chinese mythology, Japanese mythology, so many amazing mythologies. I've taught them all at some point or another. I would love to. It's just a question of how long am I going to be around and which one am I going to get to next. I mean, one book takes about a year. So, you know, I'm counting out. All I can say is as long as you guys enjoy them, I'll keep writing them. So thank you guys so much for coming out. Take care.